Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and it's great to have everybody joining us. We've got Sam Bradley, we've got BJ Schneider, and another special guest coming in to join us this week. And of course, first off, we've got to kick it over to Sam because this is we're recording on an extra night this week.
We are, because we're really kind of excited about this topic, and we love getting stories from the inside of disaster. And God knows our guest tonight has just been, impacted by bang, 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 three in a row, and we hope there's not four coming into Louisiana, because BJ will mention that a little bit. But Jamie, it's been, since we talked earlier in the week, it's been kind of crazy out there. We got the big earthquake in Italy. What do you know about that?
Well, and we record usually on Tuesday nights, and right after we recorded, really, 3 a.m. in Italy, that Wednesday morning, the earthquake struck. And so right after we got done recording, essentially, the earthquake struck. And right now, as of today, which is Thursday that week, death toll has hit 250 people. Of course, they're still digging people out. And really, the challenge here was that some of these structures were hundreds of years old. There was, they weren't built to any kind of building code necessarily. So they were masonry construction. So they just crumbled in on themselves and just, flattened out. And so there have been some heroic rescues and some good news, as they found some people alive in pockets and whatnot. But, they've also, found, whole families buried and killed. So it's been quite tragic for, what essentially are small towns in Italy, small communities in a rural area that were struck quite hard by this. And, you need to... Everybody is at some risk for earthquakes. Some places are higher risk than others, but you certainly need to be aware of how your building you live in is constructed and when it was constructed. And obviously more modern structures are able to withstand some of these forces a little bit better than others.
Well, in the 3 in the morning, and of course, one thing about earthquakes that are worse than tornadoes or hurricanes or anything else is you don't know when they're coming. And if they hit at 3 in the morning, people are in their homes, they're not even awake. So it's really kind of a worst case scenario. And they've had some pretty significant aftershocks as well. I did see a story float by that I didn't get a chance to grab, but I think they found a small child after 17 hours or something. So there's always a few good news stories. But in general, I expect they're going to keep getting aftershocks as well. So maybe if Dr. Joe pops in tonight, I'd love to get the USAR perspective on that, because that's when you deal with that unreinforced masonry and those older buildings, man. There's just chance.
Maybe, Sam, that's an option for a future episode, topic altogether, is talking different construction types and USAR response and things like that. So make a note of that, and we'll hit it another time.
Yeah,
really important.
That.
City like New Orleans has such a historic area that none of it meets any sort of code, so that'll be interesting.
That's true, but have you ever had any earthquakes down there?
No, but we run across some of the same problems due to – our problem is everything is so soft. We actually sit on a plate, but we never feel anything because it's a giant pudding bowl.
Oh, God.
The giant – well, maybe that should be the podcast episode, the giant pudding bowl.
Giant pudding – I have to make a note of that. Okay, giant pudding bowl. Yeah, it's – well, that's kind of like some areas of California where the water table is so high as it is down there that you just would sink right into it. So hopefully we'll never have any earthquakes.
Yeah, and we've got other stuff in the news, I know, as well. Things are getting a little more active in the tropics. So the East Coast hurricane season is in full swing. We're coming into September, which is typically the busiest month of the year. And I know BJ and our guest Ginger had mentioned that they had their eyes on something. BJ?
Yeah, we're watching Tropical Wave Invest 99L, which will be named H. Hermione if it puts itself together. We're hoping we have absolutely nothing to talk about in a week or so, that it just peters out and disappears, but we have to be ready. We're doing daily reports now with all our departments and doing all our pre-planning, because we have to make sure that we're all ready in advance before it even gets in the Gulf of Mexico.
And I think Ginger mentioned that one was drunk because they weren't quite sure where it was going. It doesn't know where it's going. So
yeah, like all the systems, it's kind of fun to just watch them as they weave around, and they pretty much do exactly what you don't want them to do. They're kind of like an ex-wife, so.
Well, you just never know. You crack me up.
So,
well, speak. Go ahead, Jerry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's something we talked about because even, you know, Joe up in Memphis, you know, plans for these events. And he, you know, because they sometimes in some of these situations get overflow from people being evacuated. You know, they kind of stage people farther and farther away, depending on how bad the storm's going to be. So, you know, even cities as far away as Memphis, Tennessee, and other southern areas could be preparing to receive inflow from the coastal regions from people being evacuated. So, you know, everybody gets different levels of planning notifications on things like this, and it just something we'll keep an eye on. Maybe we'll have nothing to talk about, like BJ said, next Tuesday.
If we're lucky. Boy,
I hope so. Well, BJ, since you brought Ginger in, which I really appreciate, why don't you introduce her to us, and she can tell us about the crazy couple of weeks she's had, just kind of one thing right after the other, and not the least of which was the floods, and she had something special that she set up around that. So that's what we want to talk about.
Sure. I've known Ginger for, well, I'll be polite, I'll say for a really long time. I'm not going to do that to her, but I can say that Ginger's very first ride on an ambulance was with me, and for better or for worse, she's been in EMS ever since. So,
she still stayed in the business, huh?
I wrote a book and put her in it, and she she still talks to me. So there's always that.
You are.
Yeah, I think the horses might have been pulling the ambulances back then, if I'm not mistaken.
Possibly so. But Ginger's worked in and around the New Orleans area. She's working in the Baton Rouge area now as a paramedic, doing an amazing job. And she's obviously been involved in a lot of the things that have been going on in that area, which is one of the reasons I thought she'd do so well coming on today.
Well, Ginger, just give us a snapshot of some of the, we won't get in depth on the other things, but just some of the things that kind of hit you back to back.
Well, it started with the protest from the police-involved shooting, and so we had protests going on every night, and we were working every day nonstop. We brought in extra units. We're working preparing for the worst. Thank goodness nothing really came too much during that time. Shortly after it seemed to dissipate a bit on the protests, we had the unfortunate event of the police officers that were ambushed at one of the places that we all frequent as first responders to get our coffee and drinks. And we did lose three of our officers, one still fighting for his life in the hospital. And immediately following that is the however many thousands of inches of rain that we received, and it felt like an hour, and caused such devastating loss to so many people's homes and our medics as well. So that's what we've been dealing with.
What's that?
That's what they've been dealing with. That's what they've been dealing with, which is quite
a bit. Yes.
I mean, just back to back to back. And of course, all of those events required overtime hours and things like that. So it must have been it still is probably quite a strain.
We're exhausted, and we have a lot of additional outside services that come in through the state and are assisting us with our call volume. We're running nonstop, and fortunately for me, I still commute from Kenner. I have about an hour drive, so I was good and dry at my house, so I'm not having to deal with that end of it. But so many of our medics are trying on their days off, what little days they have off, to get their homes handled, gutted, meet with insurance adjusters, and, you know, all of the things that go along with that.
And, of course, with the specter of another storm on the horizon, that's just about the last thing you need.
Yeah, we're just kind of trying to pretend that's not existing right now.
It's about all you can do. Just cross your fingers and hope for the best.
Pray for the best.
You need a vacation. Maybe yes. October, November, but oh my God, I can't imagine. So tell us a little bit about what it's like to be you in a flood scenario, and BJ, certainly jump in there. What is it like as a paramedic in New Orleans or in, you know, southern Louisiana, well, to deal with something like that?
Well, I was a medic in the New Orleans area during Katrina, and I lost my home also in Katrina. And so when this started, of course, there was no warning, which was the difference. And it's insane, actually. There's no real other words to put it. You, of course, we didn't lose communications in Baton Rouge like we did in New Orleans after Katrina. There was no, you know, radio communication or cell communications, but you have people, you know, firemen on boats, medics trying to meet the boats, ambulances trying to get to those people, but this street's flooded. That's, you know, you're trying to snake your way through. You're in, you know, knee-deep water, waist-deep water, trying to figure out how to get to the people that need us, you know, or how to get them out to waiting ambulances. And the water keeps coming up, so you don't know, once you get in, can you get out? You know, it's just organized chaos, I guess.
Yeah, I can well imagine, because you have so many road closures due to either debris or to water, and you never know when it's still coming. And then, of course, just the chaos of trying to rescue all those people. Do you set up collection points in a safe area? Do people know where to bring folks once they get them out of their homes?
Well, you do, but at the same point, it's kind of hard. I don't know any of them personally, but they call themselves the Cajun Navy, the gentlemen that all came in with boats. And so if the people are out on the water on the boats rescuing people, they don't have any way of knowing then and there where to bring them. So those guys just kind of went in and started, you know, rescuing people, because water, in especially in Denham Springs, I know water got up to rooftops, and in northern Baton Rouge and Baker and Zachary. And so they would just bring them, I guess, to the drier areas. And from there, they would get, you know, snaked out to the National Guard or the waiting ambulances or, you know, however, and then end up getting to the hospital. So at some point when it stops rising, or, you know, the rain stops, then you can kind of get, you know, they start setting up the shelters and that kind of stuff. But during the middle of it, it's just a matter of getting them to drier land and then getting them, you know, passed on from there.
BJ, did you have a thought?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that this event is so unique. And, you know, we've talked a lot in the past about Hurricane Katrina, or any hurricane for that matter. And although we didn't have a lot of warning, you did have some warning. And then you had a long period of rescue / cleanup that happened after. The storm itself took very little time. This event here was over 3 days, where they were getting periods of up to 3 inches of rain an hour. They had cumulative totals almost 30 inches of rain in some areas. And this is South Louisiana. We're covered with hundreds of small rivers and creeks and bayous. And once all that runoff started overflowing, there was no way to stop it. It had to run its course. No one was prepared. Nobody went to work saying, well, it's going to rain tonight, we better mobilize and have extra people on hand. And that's kind of exactly what happened. And once it started, everybody was caught in the middle of it.
Yeah, some of us get used to static situations like earthquakes, and even though we know there's aftershocks, the event itself only lasts seconds. Where you guys have a dynamic situation going on for days, that, you know, everything keeps changing. The road that was open 20 minutes ago isn't open anymore. So right. I can only imagine that level of chaos.
And definitely to mirror what Ginger said, anybody on Facebook, take a minute to look up the Cajun Navy and give them a shout out. That is nothing but a bunch of civilians and fishermen and guys with boats who banded together via Facebook and used social media as a way to get together and rescue people. People were posting stuff on their site saying, we're stuck here, because they could still have cell coverage, and we're getting people picking them up coming by boat. And they did an amazing job. It was one of those things, those grassroots efforts that made amazing dividends. And now afterwards, Ginger, you can probably tell me, I think some of them have gotten together to help feed some groups and that also since then?
Yeah, I've been overly focused on our medic page and getting our medics help, but in the few moments I've had to read the news, I know that they're still doing a lot of great things out in the Baton Rouge area.
That is really awesome.
I hate to leave out Denham and Livingston, you know, because it's kind of all, you know, we discuss it as Baton Rouge, but it's all the surrounding areas that got it.
Well, that's kind of an interesting perspective, and I'd love to hear Jamie's perspective on this, being the social media guy he is. But, you know, Ginger, you were mentioning that there was no way to really communicate with them where your, you know, your collection points may be or so forth. But if they're using social media, in fact, a Facebook site to try and organize their efforts, it seems like there might be a way for EMS to tap into that and say, hey, by the way, you know, if you get some folks out, here's a place you can take them. Is anything like that going on?
Well, what I was referring to not being able to get the, that was more like the first day of it initially happening. Of course, the organization comes, you know, in the following days, you know, but like BJ said, there was really no time to prepare. We knew we were going to get a lot of rain, but you don't expect it to be what it was. And so once you realize that, then you start coordinating efforts and the EOC steps in and, you know, more people come in, and then it becomes more of an organized effort. But in the initial phases of it, it's you get hit so fast without realizing it.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see what you can.
It keeps changing. So, Jamie, what do you think about that social media concept? I've heard a lot about the Cajun Army. It sounds like they're a pretty great group of
Navy.
People. Navy. The Navy, of course. It's water. I knew that. What do you think, Jamie?
They get protective when they're called the Cajun Army. Yeah. You know that much.
I hope they don't listen to this.
No, it's, you know, social media has changed so much about the way we respond and manage any kind of major situation anymore. That, you know, it wasn't that long ago when we were talking with Jim and Joe on this show about the novel concept of using social media to help manage response and handle dealing with people, and actually, you know, making decisions based on social media posting. And that has come full circle. It is now the standard by which a lot of organizations and jurisdictions contact people and keep in touch. And of course, Facebook has that's set the switch they can throw that allows a region to people to click that they're alive and okay. So that family members checking on their Facebook statuses can see that they've checked in. And they did that in Italy. I think they've done that here in Louisiana. They've done it in any place there's been a major event. They've allowed for this, you know, they can just throw a switch and it allows a region to be detectable like that. So, you know, social media has changed the game in so many ways, both positively and negatively.
I agree. Completely. Yeah,
that's interesting. I didn't realize all of that, Jamie, that people could do that. That's pretty cool, because I'm seeing if you get people in the neighborhood that are trying to help who aren't really already plugged in to the EOC such that the communication isn't already established, everybody's got Facebook. You know, that is the one-stop shopping for people to go and tap into a common communication. So I hadn't really thought about that before, but it makes perfect sense. And it sounds like it worked in this case.
Yeah, it's been around for a little over a year, I think. And it's been used, you know, a dozen or so times. It was used in Turkey when they had the coup attempt. And, you know, people were in the streets and there was a lot of chaos going on. They actually flipped the switch there so that people could check in with their family and say, I'm okay.
So switching gears a bit here, Ginger, you talked about how many EMSers and police and fire lost their homes in this flood, and certainly as they did in Katrina. I think you're doing something to help that effort, aren't you? Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I created a Facebook page. It's Helping East Baton Rouge Paramedics. It happened because I went in, my partner Ashley and I went in on McCall in one of the harder hit areas. And when I got out of the truck, the floodwaters had receded. It was the family's first day back in. And the smell and the sights and the looks on their faces, and it all just took me back to Katrina and how I felt working it and losing my home. And I said, you know, I need to turn this PTSD issue into something positive. And, you know, how can I help my fellow medics? We had no idea how many had lost their homes, you know, at this point. I know two of them waded through waist-deep water from their houses and got on a deuce and a half and got dropped off at the station to come to work. And so I knew it was pretty bad. And so I decided, you know, I've been a medic in the New Orleans area for give or take 20 years. And so I have a lot of first responder family, so to speak, down in the New Orleans area. I'm fairly new to Baton Rouge EMS starting last December. And I figured I could start this page and hopefully bridge the gap. And some of the New Orleans medics that had been affected and dealt with it and, you know, maybe willing to come out and help. And it's gotten, you know, it's really done some wonderful things. We had 6 or 8 collection points set up down here in the New Orleans area where we collected clothes and cleaning supplies, toys, and all that. And we brought 3 truckloads up to our headquarters in Baton Rouge. And we've got, you know, at this point, it's been shared. I don't know how many times we've got, you know, people calling and messaging us from all over the country. What can we do to help? You know, what can we send? What can we, you know, can we come in? They want to do strike teams. And it also put me in contact with a gentleman that has created a group called SELA 1055, which is Southeast Louisiana. Stands for Southeast Louisiana. 1055 is the code for Officer Needs Assistance. And he's coming out with about 50 officers from the New Orleans area and from New York, because they went and helped in New York, so from the Hurricane Sandy. And they're coming in, I believe, Labor Day weekend. We're helping organize that. And they help deal strictly with first responders and helping them get back on their feet with their houses. So it's been extremely successful in getting the word out and getting help to my EMS family up in Baton Rouge.
I am just blown away by that. That is so cool. And I imagine, you know, having been through what you went through, it's kind of cathartic for you to be able to turn around and help the folks in Baton Rouge. And God knows, Jamie and I will both blast that out to our circles to see if we can't get more donations for you or something. I think it's just really awesome.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like you're getting some good resources in there.
We really did. And then we have a paramedic association in East Baton Rouge. We're a nonprofit organization. So, you know, it's a little separate from, you know, our service. Started a funding page, a disaster assistance fund for, we have 47 medics and support staff that have lost just about everything.
Ouch.
And so they and are continuing to work. And so we started a disaster fund, and the great thing about it being a nonprofit is that it's a tax deduction to the donor. But not only that, the recipients, the medics and the support staff that receive it, because it's been a presidentially declared disaster area, will receive those funds tax-free.
Wow,
and so it's amazing. It's an amazing thing that we've been able to accomplish. And it's just, you know, it's we have one medic that, I'll refer to him the way he wants me to refer to him. We call him Puddin. That's how everybody knows him. I don't know why. I probably should get the backstory on that one. But he, on his days off, we work the same rotation, but on his days off, he's out on, you know, helping every one of our medics gut their houses. He relays the information to me with the addresses on what we're doing, you know, whose homes we're doing. I get the information to the strike teams that are coming out. Another paramedic, Lacey, and we're just all street paramedics. You know, Lacey helps man the Facebook page, you know, and we've just all banded together because, you know, we truly are a family. And so we've all just come together to try to help our fellow family members that have lost everything and do what we can for them.
And yeah. Sam,
Yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
Just so everybody knows, that's on generosity.com. It's East Baton Rouge EMS Association Disaster Relief. They've earned right at about $2,600 already in donations so far, and they're looking, obviously, to get a lot more. So anybody interested in donating, and they can go to generosity.com and find the page there.
And excellent. We'll, of course, also have links to this in the show notes, so stand by for that. We'll make sure that we do that, and I'll be pushing this out on my social media channels under PodMedic as well, so we'll find that.
Well, I know we're winding down, but I got a question for you guys, and it shows my ignorance when it comes to dealing with floods like this, but what does it actually take in terms of water to determine that a home is no longer viable, that it's destroyed?
That turns into
on
insurance.
A lot of factors.
Turns into an insurance company question too.
Okay. I just really don't have a concept of that. So
home construction plays
how long,
so much into it.
And how long the water sits?
Exactly.
How much does the mold grow before there's so many factors to determine that, and truly, like BJ said, it kind of depends on the insurance company.
Yeah, you're right. Because I guess there's issues after the fact, after the water goes down, like you said, like mold and whether you're in sewer water. And I know that's one issue that I do remember from working a flood down there, that because you usually have septic tanks and those kind of intermingle with the flood waters, and it's just a whole different level of ugly.
Right. I mean, so. One of the things that happened after Katrina is areas people couldn't get back to their homes for weeks, and once the water went down and we had several weeks of 90 degree weather, any damage that was there was exponentially increased by the way they just set and didn't have a chance to be worked on. And that's kind of the big thing we're trying to help with all the people in this, is the faster teams can get in there, get help done, get the bad stuff stripped out and the new stuff brought in, the easier it is on them to go back into their homes and with their families.
Yeah. Ginger, I can't applaud you enough for what you're doing. I bow to your... not just your expertise and everything you're doing down there, but going the extra mile for your people. I'm just blown away by that, and I can't wait to let people know about it. Jamie, I don't know. I think you and I need a little more training on flood scenarios. I'm not nearly as knowledgeable as I should be, and I wish Dr. Joe had been able to come on with us, because I'm sure he'd had some good questions.
Well, and it's just... it just goes to show us that we can train a lot for some things, and no amount of training prepares us for others. But in that regard, we still have the opportunity to try to prepare as best we can. And that's one of the reasons we're so thankful for our sponsors, Paragon Medical Education Group, who specializes in disaster training and preparedness for all sorts of major events that might strike a region for the first responders. And so I would urge you, if you've looked at this, if this story has struck you and you've wondered, could something like this happen to me, reach out to them. Go to their site, paragonmedicalgroup.com. You can find them on Twitter at ParagonMedEDU. Find them on Facebook at Paragon Medical Group. Look them up and really examine what they can do for you. Reach out to them. They're, Dr. Joe, Jim, and the rest of the team there are really easy to work with. They want to help you. They're responders themselves, and so they understand the constraints people work under as far as budget. They work within what people can do and put together the program that's best for your area. So reach out to them and thank them while you're at it for sponsoring the Disaster Podcast and enabling us to bring this show to you for what now, 2.5 years? Sam?
Pretty close. Yeah. Pretty close, Jamie. In fact, as we move in toward going to Expo, it's going to be pushing 3, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 3 coming up in January or something like that. So, yeah, it's coming around.
Awesome. And we never run out of things to talk about, do we?
Well, that's the sad part of it. I mean, we talked about it. At the beginning, Ginger and BJ are saying, hey, let's hope the next storm doesn't come along in 5 to 7 days. And that's exactly the way it's been working. There's never not an event going on. And so there's never a time when we don't have something we could be talking about. And that's good for us as podcasters. But bad for the people that have to deal with it. So hopefully we can, in some small way, help people prepare better and understand the challenges that they might face should something happen in their region.
Yes, and I love the inside stories from the EMSers. And I like the other people out there that are listening that may not be in pre-hospital care or EMS to really kind of understand their world a little bit and how life changes for them when a major disaster hits. And I'm really hoping, Ginger, we can get you back on sometime later. And I certainly know BJ will be there. But I'd love to get you back on and talk about some of your other adventures and maybe something a little happier than a flood. But really enjoyed this. Really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And BJ, where can folks find you? Remind them about your books and where they can find out more about what you're doing.
I can be found at Xiphos Books, XIPHOSBOOKS.net, or on Facebook at Xiphos Books. And they can find Welcome to New Orleans, How Many Shots Did You Hear?, my collection of short story nonfiction. And within the next month, volume two of that, Welcome to New Orleans, The Life You Save May Take Your Own, Volume 2. So,
and then they can read my first day in that first book you wrote. Ginger's first day is the title of the story.
Can't wait for that.
Oh, that's awesome. And now I have a face to go, or a voice at least, to go with that story.
So yeah, that's awesome. True. We'll hear Ginger in her head.
Yeah, well, and folks, if you're going to be in New Orleans for EMS World Expo coming up here in a month or so, we will be there. BJ is going to come in and have some his books available. So, you know, the goal here is to have him sell out of what he brings. So let's everybody come by our booth. We'll be in the podcast studio. I don't have the booth number here with me, but there'll be some signage around, and you can ask people where the podcast studio is, and we'll have a little area there set up for BJ as well for his books. So come by.
Just come to where the fun's at. That's where we'll be.
Yep, definitely.
Exactly. We're going to make the fun, and hopefully it'll be a little drier in New Orleans.
Yeah. So, Sam, what about you? Where can folks find you?
Well, what about me? Well, for one thing, we haven't mentioned our new Facebook site for the podcast. Just look up Disaster Podcast on Facebook, and our friend Kevin from Texas has been watching that. He started it, and he's got a lot of good information up there. It's a good place for you to mention some topics or people of interest that we might want to interview. On social media in general, I am Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com.
And that'll be a good place for us to share this link as well for the generosity page.
Yes.
So we'll definitely do that. And of course, you can find me under the handle Podmedic everywhere on social media. So look me up. And it's always great to have you all check in with us as well over at the Disaster Podcast site or on our Facebook page. Leave a comment, leave a question. We'll reach out to our guests and see if we can't get those questions and comments addressed. So we've got a lot going on here, Sam. You know, it's doubly discouraging when an event strikes and affects the responders as heavily as it affects the people they're trying to help.
It sure does, because so many of them will stay on the job and just do what they have to do while they have all of that going on in the back of their mind. It's hard to imagine that level of stress. And just, you know, that's just another thing that points to the fact that disaster medicine isn't our everyday medicine.